Thank you. My name is Jay, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, KDC and Daniel, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Charlotte will read the preamble.
Hi, everybody. My name is Charlotte, and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their common strength, hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues, fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Peter will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Peter, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Marianne will read the traditions.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Marianne, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the 10th tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the 10th tradition is Dayton.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Dayton. And my sobriety date is April 9th, 1990. I'm going to turn 50 this month, and the good news is I actually spoke at a young people's meeting when I was young, so that's the benefit of getting sober young. My sponsor's name is Kevin H. I spoke to him today. My home group is the Atlantic group. I also live part-time in California, so I go to the Pacific group as well. My own opinion is this is a better group. my own opinion. I've been a member of this group since 1994. Since the beginning, I've always had a service commitment here, and I'm living steps 10, 11, and 12. And I'm just grateful for the fact that I'm still active in AA, and I hope that it remains that way. I was a huge blackout drinker back in the 1980s, and basically, you know, the 1980s were a lot different in New York City. It was very hospitable towards drinking, and fortunately for me, I was alive when I stopped drinking, and when I got here, I learned that I have a body that can't tolerate alcohol and a mind that won't leave it alone. And my first sponsor, John Forbes, the late John Forbes, said that if you're not working the steps, you're just resting between drinks. So I got thrown into recovery. I'm really grateful that I'm still here and that my life has gotten better as a result of this. This is the only fatal illness that the sufferer ends up in better condition after they take the cure than before they were diagnosed. I'm going to talk about the traditions tonight. If you're brand new, you probably don't even know what the traditions are. And basically, the traditions are the principles that help us operate as a society because we're a bunch of alcoholics. I mean, we're lunatics. Can you imagine if we were all drinking in here tonight? I mean, this place would be absolute mayhem. And if you stick around long enough, you're going to learn it's not about the drinking. It's really about our spiritual condition. So if we're all, like, really spiritually ill tonight, that would also be mayhem. So we have these traditions to keep the organization in together. And my friend Tika always uses the analogy of a fishbowl, that we're the fish, the water would be the program, and the bowl is the traditions. Without the bowl, the whole thing's not going to be together. So at this meeting, what we do is we read the long form of the tradition. What's listed right up there are the 12 traditions. Those are just the names of the traditions. The actual traditions are the long form. And incidentally, one of the long form traditions is shorter than the long form because that's the guys that developed this were a bit nutty. Tradition 10, no AA group or member should ever in such a way as to implicate AA express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous group oppose no one concerning such matters. They express no views whatever. And this is actually a really easy tradition to talk about because basically as a group, as an organization, we don't have an opinion on any outside issues. And if you've been around for a while, you know that I'm going to talk about the Washingtonians. And if you're new, you've never heard of the Washingtonians, welcome to the Washingtonians. We're not the Washingtonians, but they don't even teach this on college-level history. The Washington, back in the 1800s, the temperance movement had a lot of influence in the United States, but they weren't very successful. And back in 1840, six men from Baltimore who were, quote, drunkards, went to a lecture for someone for the temperance cause, and after the lecture, they decided, "Hey, let's give this a shot." And they basically had the opinion that the alcoholic could be reformed. Everything up to that point kind of like put the alcoholic to the side. So they thought that alcoholics could be reformed through spiritual principles. And they were very similar to AA today, and it became a very large movement. The estimates that the total membership was between 1 million and 6 million people, and this was back in the mid-1800s. The drunkards, though, only numbered 100,000 to 600,000, so you kind of see where the problem might be, is that there were a lot of people that were using the organization for their own ends, primarily the temperance movement. And here in AA, we don't have any opinion one way or whatever about alcohol. The alcohol is perfectly fine to people who don't drink alcoholically. But here we choose to have recovery. And one of the big misconceptions in AA is that the Washingtonians ceased to exist because they didn't have traditions. And actually what happened, they had a pretty short run of it. They got very big, but by 1848, they didn't exist whatsoever. They totally were gone by 1848. So they had a quick expansion and a quick downfall. And I want to read something. This is Washingtonian literature, and it's written in the third person in the past tense, but it was actually written by the Washingtonians as all this was going on. I think this will ring a bell with a lot of us. The society was to recognize no creative religion nor party in politics, and that neither politics nor religious action of any kind should ever be induced in the society's operations. Personal abstinence from all intoxicating drinks was to be the basis and the only requisite for membership. Moral suasion was to be the only means by which they, as a body, were to induce others to adopt their principles. As a society, their whole business was to induce others not to drink intoxicating liquors. They would thus be less likely to excite suspicions or prejudices of any class of men and have free access to all. That sounds an awful lot like the AA preamble and the traditions that we have. So the Washingtonians, they did have principles and they did have traditions that they wanted to abide by. The fact of the matter is they didn't adhere to their own principles, and that's why they ceased to exist. Because essentially what happened is initially only alcoholics could share at the Washingtonian meetings. And after a while, the temperance people, who vastly outnumbered the alcoholics, got tired of listening to the alcoholics reciting their stories. And they wanted to move the temperance cause. So then, next thing you know, Abraham Lincoln spoke at a Washingtonian meeting, and he wasn't an alcoholic. And so the temperance movement basically took over, and then there were things with the abolitionist movement. But basically, because of outside influences, it ceased to exist. And Van always used to say that AA is never going to fall apart because of outside influences. We're going to fall apart because of inside because of what we do in here, breaking our own traditions. And the funny thing is, we have no opinion on outside issues, but General Services employs a public relations policy person. That's their job. They're a PR person. Their job is to pick up the phone and say, "We have no opinion. We have no opinion." And years ago, there were a few cases that were in the New York judicial system that there were people convicted of crimes were being sent to AA, and the people who were convicted said, "Well, AA is a religion. You can't send us there. It violates the Establishment Clause." And it went all the way up to the Court of Appeals, and AA didn't submit a brief. We had no opinion on it. And eventually the court ruled that AA was not a religion, but it did have religious aspects to it. Therefore, judges couldn't compel anyone to actually go to AA. There was another case where a guy up in Westchester, this was in the 1990s, shared a meeting that he thought he killed his parents in a blackout. Well, as it turns out, he did kill his parents in the blackout. And then he tried to get a privilege that he was basically in a religious context, and that was protected, and that really didn't go too far. But again, when that was going through the system, AA took no position on it because we don't have a position on outside issues. Years ago, when I first got sober, AA had a really cool emblem. It was a circle with a triangle in it, and they had it patented. They had it trademarked, and they in the 1990s, they actually let the trademark lapse because they didn't want to get involved with fighting in court over the trademark. And the 10th tradition in many respects mirrors a 10th step where it says we cease fighting anything or anyone, even liquor. And basically, as a group and an organization, we don't have an opinion on outside issues, but it doesn't mean that when we come in here that we surrender personal opinions. Nowhere does it say that, because as individuals, we have opinions on everything. How big should government be? How long should a child's hair be? Do we want double-stuffed or single-stuffed Oreos at the meeting? And there's nothing wrong with that, but what we have to do is we have to be careful that when we express our opinion, that we're very careful to make sure that people won't think that it's part of the AA opinion, because we wouldn't want a situation where we have like Republican AA meetings and Democrat AA meetings. What happens if you're an independent, where you go, or you're in the Green Party or something like that? And people who come into AA are always looking for a reason to leave. And so, you know, I have close friends I express my opinions to, but I really am careful, especially when I'm with someone new, to be very careful about expressing my opinions. It doesn't mean that we can't express them in some places. Some people take the tradition a bit to an extreme. Van used to say, you know, you shouldn't wear a Yankees cap into a meeting. And I think that's a matter of personal opinion. I mean, it could arise some type of controversy. I have a U.S. ski team hat. You know, am I going to not wear that because people think I'm partial to the U.S. or something? But we should be mindful of that. If we come into a meeting and we have a political button or something on, what kind of message is this sending? Is this something that could drive the person that's brand spanking new out the door? And I'm just about out of time. The one thing I really love, I love a lot about this group, I've been here for a long time. I like the fact that there are a lot of people in this group that understand the traditions. We have a meeting on Friday night, a rotating step and tradition meeting, and there are a lot of, especially new people in this meeting, that really have a good, solid grasp on the traditions. And people say the traditions are boring. I encourage you to go to the Friday night meeting, because the traditions, they're really interesting, and it's great to see them at work in a group like this. So thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Chris.
Hello, my name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I cannot believe I'm doing this. Yeah. All right, couple of facts to start off. My sobriety date is April 23rd, 2009. My sponsor is Tara S. She saved my butt about 5 minutes ago and many other times. The Atlantic Group has been my home group since about February, and it's funny, when I met Tara, my first sponsor had moved to Scotland. I was in the middle of my ninth step, and she was, at the time, the only person I talked to in AA besides my boyfriend. And I was terrified, and I had such a horrible fear of people, and I just couldn't get up the nerve to talk to anybody. I went to every meeting I went to. I would say, today I'm going to go up to this person, and I'm going to introduce myself, and the meeting would end, and I'd go, not this time, and I'd run out the door, and that went on for a long time. I celebrated a year before I had a sponsor or really made any friends. It was really hard. And so when my first sponsor had to move away, I mean, to another country, it was just like, well, what am I going to do? And I heard Tara share at a meeting, and I just liked what she said, and I got up the nerve, and I almost went out the door, actually. And I stopped, and I said, you can do this. And I asked for her number, and she brought me to the Atlantic Group. And I mean, I came here, and the first meeting I went to, I probably had 15 phone numbers. And I, you know, I go out to the diner after the meeting, and, you know, I've made friends, and it all happens really slowly. But I mean, here I am standing in front of this many people and talking, and I'm really nervous, obviously, but I'm not afraid. I'm not, you know, the fear is not there, which is pretty incredible. So how did I get here? It's amazing. You know, my parents are not alcoholics. It's in my family, but I did not experience it firsthand, and I really did not have a good idea of what alcoholism was. To me, it seemed that an alcoholic was violent and somebody who drank all the time. And I knew that I would never be like that. And when I started drinking, you know, I immediately had no control over how much I drank. But that was kind of okay. You know, the first time I blacked out, which was only a couple weeks after I'd started drinking, you know, I was carried home to my house, late for my curfew. I locked myself in the bathroom, passed out. They had to break the door down. I threw up all night. And the next day when I went to work with all these people I'd been drinking with, I was so embarrassed and afraid. And I walked into the room and they all started applauding. You know, yeah, Chris. And that was like, oh, okay, no, this is great. This is a good thing. You know, alcohol was not the center of my life right away. When I drank, I got real drunk. But I had a lot of rules about how often I drank. And I don't do shots, and I don't drink at home, and I don't drink at work. And I really was trying to control it right from the start. And when I read that section in the big book that says, here are some of the things we tried, I just burst into tears. That was the first time I really knew that I was an alcoholic. So how I ended up in AA, I was in graduate school, which is how I had moved to New York. And for the longest time, I would have these periods where it's like, okay, gotta get my act together. I'm going to get on with my life, I'm going to get this degree, and I'd buy a new filing cabinet, and I'd, you know, arrange everything, and then, good job, that was great, let's go get drunk. And the periods of getting my act together and getting drunk, you know, this side started to get shorter and shorter, and this side started to get longer and longer. And money was a real problem. As much money as I had, I drank it. And the debt started piling up, and my apartment, if you looked in any corner behind any book, was just stuffed with unopened mail. I didn't want to think about it. I'd just have another drink, just have another drink. And I'd do that thing where you'd pay for the tab on your credit card, and everybody just give me cash for your drinks, you know? And then I'd like live off of that money, and it didn't last very long. I decided to take a semester off of school and just work so I could pay back my debt, but of course, I was just drinking the whole time, and why don't I have any money? And I ended up dropping out of graduate school, and I owed them $3,500. So one night, I'm really drunk, coming home from a bar in a cab, passed out, and as I left the cab, I had trained myself to kind of do this thing in case my phone was somewhere, because I'd left it in a cab so many times. And I found, you're not going to believe what I found, I found an envelope, unmarked and open. And I thought, maybe this is mine, and then I stumbled into my house. And I looked inside of it, and it was $4,000 in cash, which was exactly what I needed to go back to school. And then I'd been complaining, you know, I'd been complaining about, oh, my job, I don't get the right section, I don't make enough money, and, you know, if only school, they should be paying for it. You know, I blamed everybody else. But here it is, got handed to me, and I didn't want to do it right away, so I put it in a shoebox, because I wasn't quite ready. And before I went to the bar, you know, maybe I just grab a 20. You all know what happened. You know, one day I opened the shoebox and there was nothing there. Nothing, you know. And that was a big lesson for me. And that was when I started to realize, you know, wow, there's something really wrong with me. And I knew one person who had quit drinking, someone that I worked with. And I asked him, you know, how did you do it? And he said, I go to AA. And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard, you know? That's not what we do. I drank with this person. We're not like that, you know? And he hadn't been going long enough to hear that suggestion about not dating for a year, so we started dating about 2 weeks after I quit drinking. So I quit drinking on my own, like locked in my room, like I'm not going out, I'm not hanging out with anybody, and this is great. No, I feel great. I'm great. This is so great. But after, you know, after a few months of that, I mean, it's really the stuff that happens in here, sitting with it, is unbelievable. And I didn't understand why when I rode the subway, suddenly I was picturing stabbing people in the eye, like this rage would come out. And, you know, just like all these feelings. And so I finally said, all right, you know, I'll go to a meeting. And he took me to my first meeting, and I did identify, but I was still hanging on. And I started going to therapy, too, just to kind of like, maybe there's another scientific, you know, I was really avoiding the God situation, of course. And so after I left the therapist's office one day, I said, you know, this is what's going to fix me. This is going to, you know, and he had suggested controlled drinking. And I was like, I tried that. I said it to him. I said, I've been trying to control it my whole life. And so I just thought to myself, you know, I don't know what I should do. And right there, I was outside Grand Central, inexplicably was a big book, a 12 and 12, and a Living Sober just sitting on the sidewalk. And I was like, okay, I'm in, I'm doing it, I'm going. And, you know, like I said, it took me a really long time to connect, you know, and to come in and to ask for help and to meet people. It took a while, you know, but I'm here. I mean, 2.5 years later, I'm going back to school in January and finishing my degree. And I, you know, I'm paying back the debt. I opened my mail and, you know, it's pretty incredible. And it's all thanks to this program. So thank you.
And tonight, our main speaker is Paul.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and I'm glad to be at the meeting tonight. I finally found out who stole my AA books at Grand Central Station, you know. Thanks a lot, Chris. I was on a 12-step call. The guy's probably still drinking, you know, and that was really wonderful. And Dayton, thank you so much. And we came in, a few of us came in from Long Island. We left about 9 o'clock last night, and we got here about 20 minutes ago, and started off in a canoe, then horseback, 2 trains, and it's good to be here, and it's good to be sober. If there's any newcomers here tonight, I want to welcome you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Perhaps you can identify with this. There's a newcomer's talking to a sponsor, and he says, it's hard to believe that 90 days ago that I was sitting in a hot tub, half drunk, surrounded by women in bikinis. And the sponsor says, isn't it wonderful that you don't have to live that way anymore today? And if there's any non-alcoholics here tonight, you're welcome to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. On a personal note, I'm actually fascinated by non-alcoholics. My wife's a non-alcoholic, and it just really intrigues me. You know, I often tell this story. It's so indicative. We were at a party one night, and I got my wife a drink. And I'm walking around, and I come back over to her, and I says, she says, can you get me another drink? I said, well, what happened to the drink that I just got you? She says, I set it down, and I don't know where I set it. I'm like mystified by this. I said, you set it down and you don't know where you set it? Are you telling me you lost it? Is that what you're trying to tell me? You lost your drink? I mean, I just can't get my head. I'm thinking, how do you lose a drink? You know, I just can't. I'm thinking to myself, I've lost my car, you know. I've lost a few days off the calendar, you know. I've lost my job, you know. You mean I got to come in every Monday? You know, and I should probably realize I'm not from the neighborhood here originally, you know, and they're running 2 CDs right now. They got for those of you that don't have the Shamrock edition of Hooked on Phonics, you know, they're They're running an English-speaking version, and then we've got a pop-up book for newcomers who just don't know what's going on, no matter what language it's in, you know? And I'm a sort of an alcoholic, you know, you get that whole nature-nurture thing. I believe I could have been brought from the delivery room to the AA room, literally. You know, I just brought in here and just like, you know, you see this guy over here. You see the newcomer in the bassinet, give him a white chip, you know, and make sure he doesn't swallow it. You know, I really, you know. But I know you have to drink alcohol to be an alcoholic. But long before I ever took a drink, irritable, discontent, had that stone in the shoe. Always looking for an outside fix for what's really an inside job. You know, and I mean, I grew up in a hard drinking neighborhood. I knew about drinking. I seen it up close and personal in my own life, in my own family. I seen public drunkenness in the neighborhood. But it couldn't keep me away from alcohol. And I can't, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I have known nothing like taking the first drink. You see, the closest thing to spiritual experience that actually isn't one is drinking alcohol. It's this close. It looks like the real deal. It feels like the real deal. You think it was the real deal, but it's not. It's bogus, and it's counterfeit, and it's phony. The only way I can describe it, when I took a drink, it was like my life went from black and white to color, like that. Booze does for me what I can't do for myself. My wife drinks. She's a non-alcoholic. She drinks because what alcohol does to her. I drink because what alcohol does for me. Alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for the normal heavy drinker. It's like this. Before I took a drink, I felt like this, and you looked like this. I take one drink, I feel like this, and you look like this. When alcohol does that for you, you're coming back for more. I don't care what the consequences are. I can identify with Bill Wilson. He says that when he took his first drink, he was at a party. They were shipping out to World War I, and they had a party for the officers. Have you ever seen photographs of Bill Wilson, 6'3", 6'4", gangly? He was standing with his back against the wall. He felt socially inept. He felt out of place. He was being introduced to all these people. And then the magic happened. Someone put a drink in his hand. And immediately he felt like he was the center of party. And people were being introduced to him. I know what that feels like. If you'd have told me when I took my first drink where I was going to end up 15 years later, I'd have said, no way. You must be thinking about somebody else. But if you're new here tonight, this disease is relenting. Relenting. It'll take your job. It'll take your car. It'll take your wife. It'll take the shirt off your back. But what it really wants is me 6 feet under. I believe of all terminal diseases, this is the most terminal. If I didn't stop drinking, drinking would have stopped me. I'm not around here a lifetime, but I'm around here long enough to know what happens if you take your eye off the ball. This disease will kill you stone dead with or without booze in your body. I don't need booze in my body to burn my life to the ground. I can do it because I won't put those steps in my life. I won't live by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm walking around with untreated alcoholism. I've been the jumping off place twice in my life, once with drink and once without drink. Different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. And the Merchant of Venice, Shylock, wanted just 1 pound of flesh, not this disease. It will clean your clock completely. But I'm not here to scare anybody, because I know you can't scare an alcoholic. But I'm here to tell you, please, give it serious thought before you go back out that door again. I believe if you're an alcoholic, there's nothing out there but pain, trouble, and misery. Hang close to Alcoholics Anonymous. Stay close. This is a wonderful group. Dayton was talking about the triangle. There's 3 parts to that triangle. Unity, service, and recovery. I need all 3 parts, and I believe you can work all 3 parts from your first meeting. I need this. I need the unity. Many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, and none make it impossible. I got to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Service. The highest pay grade in Alcoholics Anonymous is service. I got to give, and I got to give, and I got to give, because I'm self-centered in the extreme, driven by 100 forms of it. My holy trinity is me, me, me. My wife catches me all the time. She'll be telling me some problem that she was going through, and I'll glaze over. And she'll say, you're thinking how this is going to affect you, right? And I go, no, I'm not, but I am. I used to say to my sponsor, I think it's DNA. He goes, no, you would think it's DNA because it's so deeply within you, but it's not. And it has to be pulled out root and branch. And we just have to do that. We just have to give. Bill Wilson sat down the 23rd Street Clubhouse a few years into the program. His furniture's in storage. His wife's working in the department store. He's sitting there feeling sorry for himself, right? The two guys you got to watch for in AA, the great I am and the poor little me. He's sitting there feeling sorry for himself. And he gets a visit from a priest, Father Ed Dowling, a Jesuit priest. And Father Ed Dowling says, what's wrong with you? He says, look, I'm one of the co-founders. When's my ship going to come in? And Father Ed Dowling said to him, listen, you suffer from what's called divine dissatisfaction. And that's going to push you to places you never wanted to go. That stone in the shoe. And you'll come to a place that you never knew existed. That's the way it is for us guys. And recovery. I got to put the 12 steps in my life. Am I an arm's length away from a drink? Yes. But I'm 12 steps away from a drink. I just can't get drunk because whatever. But I can backtrack through those steps. Take my will back in 3. Become insane in 2. So insane that I tell myself, I ain't an alcoholic, or I don't care and get drunk in the first step. I've seen people drink again in Alcoholics Anonymous I thought would never drink again. So this tells me it's a daily reprieve. I got to get my card punched. Every day, I got to work this thing. The only way you coast in Alcoholics Anonymous is downhill. Eventually, you hit reality, sea level, and it's lights out. If you're new here tonight, I encourage you. I believe you can work all 3 parts of that triangle from your first meeting. Going to meetings, getting in service. Maybe the steps seem like a foreign concept. Use the slogans like the banisters to the steps. I believe as an alcoholic, I must have something between me and the first drink, or I will drink again or go off a bridge because I can't live with me upon me 24/7. And I found this all here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol is only mentioned the first half of the first step. I need the other 11 and a half steps to help me do what I couldn't do drunk or sober. And that's live out there in God's world under his conditions rather than my demands. This stop the world I want to get off. This over the rainbow type philosophy. Always find the needle in the haystack and then sitting right on top of it. Didn't I tell you this thing sucked? You know? And so as I said there, I took that first drink back in Northern Ireland. And as I said there, a big chip on my shoulders, a kid growing up, working class Catholic from the wrong side of the tracks during the Troubles. In fact, it's funny, when I first came to AA, a guy says to me one night, he says, you know something, Paul? You're a well-balanced guy. And I thought to myself, finally, somebody knows what's going on around here, you know? It's just, yes, you got a chip on both shoulders, you know. I hated everything, I hated everybody, but the person I couldn't live with is a man in the glass. The man in the mirror. There's a guy in our group and he's got a thing on his bathroom mirror and it says, you're looking at the problem. I'm the problem. I've always been the problem and I always will be the problem. I had that misconception, if I can get things right out there, well then things will fall into place in here. A101 tells you that happiness is an inside job. The change must start with me from within. But you couldn't tell me as a drinker starting out, I was getting away with it for the most part. But alcohol really did a number on me. When I look back on it now, it literally just swooped down and picked me up. Just unbelievable. I took a drink at 15 years of age. Within a year, I was getting my stomach pumped out in hospitals. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm a daily drinker. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm taking a morning drink. I was brought by good parents with good principles. But things just got worse and got worse and got worse. That's the story of my alcoholism. It got progressively worse. But the good news is sobriety's progressive too. And as far down as you go with drink, you can come back up and then some in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to stand here like some snake oil salesman and promise you the moon and the stars. There's things that I lost through drinking, they ain't coming back. And there's things that you lost through drinking, they're not coming back either. But because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can live with the consequences of my drinking. Who among us could live with the guilt and the shame and remorse if it wasn't for the 12 steps to alleviate that? We don't do the steps because they're nice. We do them because they're necessary for recovery. If I want to get physically and mentally and spiritually and emotionally rehabilitated, I must work this program. I've tried every other way of staying sober. This is the last thing I tried and the first thing that ever worked. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't born in this country. I was born in Ireland. And is ever a country that needed Alcoholics Anonymous, believe me, it was Ireland. If you didn't drink, you moved. You know what I'm saying? And I feel blessed to be born in the time that had Alcoholics Anonymous. There's been people like us since man first crushed grapes. Couldn't fit in, took drink, couldn't fit in, ran at life with drink, ran away from life with drink. We were society's first outcasts. What was the choices for us? Jails, institutions, and death. Because of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith, there's a fourth option on the table, and it's a pretty good one, where hopeless alcoholics like us can come here on the worst night of our life and be given the grace not to. It's not the grace of God to be given the grace not to drink for one day. And then that's why I'm so happy all the greeters out here. You know where I found God? I found him in the warm handshake. I found him in the bottom of a coffee pot. People get people sober, and God works through people. The program Alcoholics is organic. It's a living, breathing thing that gets passed on from one person to the other. And we can trace this moment in time back to that moment in time when Bill Wilson had that divine idea. I wonder if I can stop drinking by helping another alcoholic. The turning point in all our lives, past and present. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. You hear people saying, oh, the program is so hard. You know what's hard? Waking up in the morning and you need to drink so bad, you're jumping out of your skin. Sound like I said a bar or a liquor store, wondering if they're ever going to open. Those are hard terms. These are not hard terms coming here with my brothers and sisters and staying sober one day at a time. I bartended the last 7 years drinking and the first 12 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most alcoholics die drunk. They don't even hear of AA. So I feel richly blessed that I got here, heard a message instead for more. As I said, there, I'm a kid here in Northern Ireland drinking. I'm getting away with it for the most part. But there's something missing, that stone in the shoe. That's the sort of a guy I was. When I was over there, I wanted to be over here. When I was upstairs, I wanted to be downstairs. If you asked me what was wrong, I couldn't have told you. But something's not just right. I could never put my finger on it. My life was characterized by a lot of, okay, this is it. This is definitely it. No, no, this is not it either. Oh, this woman. Oh, this is definitely it. No, this is not. Trying to fill that hole in my soul with people and places and things. The only time I ever filled that hole in my soul for real was when I put the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life with the help of used people that allowed me to find a higher power. So I'm this kid growing up, as I said, there, looking for an outside fix for an inside job. I'm a runner. I'm a long-distance runner. It's no coincidence I'm standing in New York with an Irish accent, a long-distance runner, somewhere, someday. And I come home to my father. I say to my father, I said, listen, sit down, I got some bad news for you. I said, I'm going to America, and don't try and talk me out of it. He says, talk you out of it, I'll help you pack when you're leaving. On you go, Columbus. Let me give you some fatherly advice. Turn left at Greenland, and like driftwood, I washed up in a place called Rockaway Beach, New York. Nobody drinks in Rockaway Beach, New York, right? Nobody drinks there. It's amazing how the alcoholics got that built-in GPS system. You could have blindfolded me and put me in a sack. I'm going to find a neighborhood that drinks as much, if not more, than the one I left. You talk to the old-timers, the old Irish Americans, and go, oh, Rockaway Beach, the Irish Riviera. It should have been called Cirrhosis by the Sea. I mean, they had more alcoholics per square foot. There's two types of people in Rockaway Beach. Those that are in AA and those that should be in AA. You know, there's not really. And to make matters worse, I got a job as a bartender. Now, I'm using the word bar here in the loosest possible context. It was a sort of bar you got thrown into rather than out of. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this bar had it all. Alcoholics, drug addicts, degenerate gamblers. And that was just the staff. That wasn't even the customers, you know? I remember standing behind the bar one day and I said to myself, this must be what like happy hour on the island of Dr. Moreau must look like, you know? I'll give you a mental picture and then I'll move on. If you want to see a full set of teeth in this bar, you need a 32 customers. You know what I'm saying? It's the sort of place we're talking about. Male and female. Every now and again, a glamour girl with like three teeth would stumble into the place, you know? Upset the whole ecosystem. And now I'm doing some serious drinking at this stage. I've done it. I've experienced what I think is every form of drinking. I was a weekend drinker, a daily drinker, morning drinking, binge drinking. But the drinking that put my lights out, I was a periodic alcoholic at the end up. I'm starting to hit hospitals now. When I take one drink, creates a thirst I can't quench. I don't know this. I don't know that I'm paralyzed over alcohol. I got a body that won't let me drink and a mind that won't let me stop. My life's unmanageable, drunk or sober, because I'm running it. I don't know any of this stuff till I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I start hitting hospitals. I'm having convulsions and seizures. I'm locked up for a drink. I'm strapped down for a drink. I'm end up in like restraining sheets. And I drink again and I drink again. Because I think my problem is drinking. A drinking problem is solved by not drinking. Unfortunately, I suffer from alcoholism. And that's a horse of a different color. It's physical, and it's mental, and it's spiritual, and it's wrapped up in a body full of sick emotions. As Bill Wilson says, not drinking is a start, a brief start, but it must be followed up by something else. And I would stop drinking. And I'll give you a quick example. I went into alcoholic convulsions in a bar one time, and I woke up in Peninsula Hospital, Rockaway. And they had me strapped to the bed in restraining cuffs to fill me up full of Librium, whatever, to get me down off the ceiling. And the woman who's my wife today was standing at the bedside. And eventually they took the cuffs off. And I took her hand. And I says, I will never, ever drink again. And I meant that if you'd got a contract. If you'd put me on a lie detector, I would have passed with flying colors. I meant that as much as anything ever meant in my life. But I didn't have anything between me and the first drink. And here's what happens when I go toe-to-toe with this disease. It's like getting in the ring with a heavyweight champion. My 7-year-old daughter could tell you, don't get in the ring. But don't get in the ring means don't take a drink. And I don't know how not to take a drink because I have nothing between me and the first drink. It's me against alcoholism. Lights out every time. I come out of that hospital. About a week goes by. I get this stone in my shoe. I don't know where it comes from, but it's there all the time. About 2 weeks go by, I get this knot in my stomach. About 3 weeks go by, the top button of my shirt feels tight all the time. I'm talking through gritted teeth. About a month goes by, it feels like everybody's on my case, even if they're not. Put an X in the calendar. I'm drinking again, because I can't live with that. Now, what is that? Is that a drinking problem? I hadn't had a drink in almost a month. That's a living sober problem. I find there's a big difference between giving up and letting go. I give up lots of times. Doesn't work. I had to let go absolutely of all my old ideas and to come in here and use people help me to get something between me and the first drink. And I drank again. I couldn't believe that I drank again. And that woman says to me what we say, what non-alcoholics say. I got to get away from you before I end up in an asylum. And I say what alcoholics say. I don't need you. I don't need nobody. And that's why there's any non-alcoholics here tonight. Thank you. And that's what we do. We just suck the love out of people till there's nothing left. And they said to me at the end up, they weren't mad, they were sad. Go away and drink. Go away and don't drink. Just go away. That's what we do to people. And I drank for another 3 years after that. Had bottoms that I didn't think existed. I'm here as a sole recipient of a old-fashioned 12-step call. A guy from the old South Bronx group. And they had a mantra, we don't give up on anybody. And they didn't give up on me. They say a miracle is a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature to be drunk right now, and I'm not. Now, how did that happen? It didn't happen because of me. It happened because of Alcoholics Anonymous. This guy was sober a long time, and he wasn't off in some ivory tower reminiscing, hooray, it's not the way it used to be. He came to my house and he carried this message. He didn't carry his message. My message mightn't even keep me sober. He carried this message. Isn't that what we do, one alcoholic helping another? Isn't that what Bill Wilson had, that vision in Towns Hospital up the block? He had a vision of a chain of drunks around the world. One drunk helping the next drunk. Chain-like. And that's what I ask in my 10th step. How strong is my link in the chain? Is it strong to the people that came behind me? Is it strong to the people ahead of me? If someone comes to me and says, Paul, can I go to a place where I won't regret the past and I wish to shut the door on it? Absolutely. Walk this journey with us. We do together what I can't do alone. The first word of the steps, we, traditions, our. It's the collective experience, strength, and hope. There's an old joke in AA. You know what's going on in here later tonight? Nothing. There's something going on in here now. Now, it didn't come in with me. I bring my bit in. You bring your bit in. 90 days, a year, 6 years, and we throw it into the middle. And it's the collective experience, strength, and hope. It's the rising tide that raises all boats. That's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Thank God for a 12-step call that was made to me. And that guy came to my house. And I was too sick to go then, but 4 days later, he brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't taken a drink from that day to now. Because of these people. Because of this program. Unbelievable. A hopeless drunkard. At the last drunk I was on, and you know this feeling, you're sitting there with your head in your hands, that head in the hands moment, I thought to myself, what happened to me? What happened to that 12 or 13-year-old boy that liked nothing more to go out and play soccer from morning to night? What happened? Alcohol happened. Alcoholism happened. That's what happened. And that guy came to my house. I was sitting in the apartment drinking round the clock against my own will, knowing loneliness and only an alcoholic can know. The thoughts of life with drink terrified me. The thoughts of life without drink terrified me. The jumping off place. Bill Wilson sums it up better than I ever heard. He says, quicksand stretched all around him. I can identify with that. No matter which way I turned, there was nowhere to go. All the stories have been told, all the jokes, whatever, it's over. And I come in here, I made my next biggest mistake. I diagnosed myself as having a drinking problem rather than alcoholism. And I tried to stay sober on the first half of the first step. You can stay dry on two parts of the triangle. You might even stay dry on one part of the triangle. But I need all three parts of the triangle to be happy, joyous, and free. I remember saying to a guy, I'm going to meetings. Service? I'm making more coffee than Juan Valdez. Are you kidding me? Service? But a guy got me to a meeting. He says, Paul, what about door number three? What about recovery? First half of the first step. I'm walking about here smiling from the teeth out. You can fool them at 7:30 at night. But you're not fooling anybody at 3:30 in the morning with the tapes are playing over and you're lying there cringing in the dark because you can't live with yourself and your past is eating your lunch. That's why I need those 12 steps, to come to terms with the past so I can live in the present for the future. And then my next biggest mistake was, I heard that there's no one-trick ponies around here. It's a 12-step program. But I built this fourth step up into like, the fourth step, the fourth step, the fourth step. And I fought it so much, and then I said to myself, they want me to do a fourth step? I'm going to do the best fourth step that anybody's ever done in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to do a fourth step that people would come up to me at the coffee pot, and they'd be standing around the coffee pot going, did you hear about his fourth step? I heard it was... I wanted newcomers to come up to me and go, are you the guy that... I wanted my sponsor to stand up at the meeting and go, I just want the whole group to know that Paul, who I am honored to call my sponsee, recently presented me with the Hamlet of fourth steps. I laughed, I cried, I laughed, two thumbs way up. So I set to work. I can complicate a brown paper bag. I set to work. I had every fourth step. Now my sponsor told me, Paul, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, like driving to Florida, will give explicit directions you can't go wrong. The 12 and 12, think of it as a spiritual guidebook. It'll tell you what you see along the way. Those two books together, my help, no problem. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's been sober since 1960. I got modern defects of character. So I entered the world of the four-step guide. I had every four-step guide that was printed. Four-step guides for men, four-step guides for Irish men who lived outside of Belfast, had a big dog called Rebel. I turned my apartment, would only be considered as a spiritual nerve center. I got like flip charts, I got magic markers, different colors. I'll write the resentments in red. That makes sense. Yes, red for anger. I got four pots of coffee going. I got the phone off the hook. My sponsor said to me, I lived in an apartment, he's shouting up, "Paul, how's that fourth step coming? Your phone's off the hook." I said, "I'm working on." He says, "How am I going to know it's finished? Will there be like a puff of white smoke like when they elect a new pope?" Everybody's saying, "Oh, look, I see the white smoke. The fourth step's been completed, you know?" I lived in Rockaway Beach. I said, "Why am I sitting here? I should be on the beach, looking on the boardwalk, looking out the ocean." So I slimmed down the operation, took it down to the boardwalk, you know? I'm sitting there with my big blank legal pad, trying to draw the columns really, really straight, you know? I'm stopping strangers. "Excuse me, do these columns look perpendicular to you?" "Who's your sponsor?" "Frank Lloyd Wright." "They're wonderful columns." There's no one-trick ponies around here. But what those steps did, guys, when I put them into my life. I mean, people like all this self-pruning, I'm working on myself. What the 12 steps done for me is, when I turned around and took another man through the steps, that's when my life caught on fire. That's when my life took on new meaning. That's when great events came to pass in my life. Helping others. The program's organic. Pass it on. We're the conduit that God works through. It's an honor and a privilege to be speaking here tonight. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I want to end on a few words from a place of my birth. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sunshine warm your face, the rain fall soft upon your fields. Until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you, Atlantic Group.